Welcome, everyone. We're calling it to order. We should start with attendance, right?
Yep. Mr. Brown, Mr. Graham.
Present.
Ms. Slapika.
Present.
Ms. Moss.
Present.
Mr. Brangle.
Present.
Mr. Preston and Mr. Neubecker.
Present.
All right, you have a quorum.
Okay. Did everyone get a chance to review the minutes from the last two meetings? Do they have a motion to approve?
Oh, that's, I apologize.
Correction noted.
It may have been done in the flurry of the morning. Sorry, I'll make that correction.
Is there a motion to accept the minutes from the last year?
There's several.
Yeah, so you would have.
First, we'll do the.
Well, you can do one motion, so you would be accepting the motion for the, it'd be for the last, the regular, regular session and executive session for the last two meetings.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Objections? So moved. Okay. Eric, you want to start?
Sure, and just for the record, there's no for the public here, so there's no public comments, so just we have that on the record. Yeah, so we've got four items just to touch on, five actually, to touch on briefly. The first one relates to an update on the recreational marijuana zoning. And I've asked Lisa Shiner, who's the assistant village administrator, and John Pape, who's the assistant to the village administrator, to be at this meeting. They both, Lisa headed up and managed the zoning process for the recreational marijuana. John is the liaison to the Historic Preservation Commission and can speak to the women's club issue when we get to that part of the agenda. So I'll turn it over to Lisa and she can give you an update on the recreational marijuana zoning.
Event that there is a dispensary that would like to locate here in River Forest, there will be ample opportunity for
neighboring property owners, but the Dykes would be allowed to go in.
Do we know if there's any action in Forest Park with a dispensary? There was a news report a while back about a company possibly wanting to go into Forest Park.
I haven't heard anything since. We've talked to a couple of our colleagues in other communities about whether or not there would be dispensaries located there. And obviously where this is really starting is with the existing medical dispensaries who are now dual licensed facilities for medical and recreational. There are a limited number of licenses that get distributed throughout the region, and that's not a region that we determine. It's determined by it relies on regions as determined by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So within the Chicago O'Hare Elgin region, there are only 47 recreational licenses that are being released, at least in 2020. I'm not sure what the future holds, but so there are a limited number of licenses within the state to go around. So that's why you're seeing this.
So, like, near
the board have a negative issue or a positive issue or a question mark issue? In other words, what was the sentiment of the board?
Oh, they approved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Because I have no problem with this at all. To me, it's less harmful than alcohol and for recreational, and for medical, I think it should be available. I don't have any stigma with it at all.
Yeah, the pragmatic reality of it all is that even with having everything approved, the folks that are coming in now are looking at existing vacant space by which either if they're not in a medical facility and they're going to start something new, they're going to look for something where they can get in and get in quickly. As you well know, in our commercial districts, we don't have a lot of just available vacant space. So in the short term, I don't see anything happening here. In the long term, if we start getting some redevelopment projects in our North and Madison Street corridors that create more storefront opportunities, I think maybe then you could start to see something. But there's really no low-hanging fruit spaces, and I think River Forest that would be attractive to a business. No.
I don't see anyone wanting to go on Lake Street given the adjacent facility, park.
Got the 100 feet.
Yeah, but even if it was there, people, they're going to want to be where there's a lot of foot traffic and a lot of density. So the only place I could see from a business standpoint wanting to go in might be North Avenue, because of the traffic there, or Madison Street. But, Madison Street isn't really an option right now.
I think it's more of a destination retailer, though. So less foot traffic, more destination. People that want it are going. You know what I mean?
If you look at the map of where the existing facilities are, there's already Melrose Park.
Yeah.
Already has one.
Yeah.
So the North Avenue corridor, I think, would be less attractive. But Madison Street, there's nothing down there. But Forest Park's looking at actually making a refinery for processing the product to get jobs there. So if that happens, I don't know if they'll have a retail too or what. But
okay,
like a Ferrero pen.
What's up?
Like at the Ferrero pen factory.
Yeah, I was thinking about the edible.
Goes well with chocolate too.
Right. At the chamber.
I've heard.
Three businesses. Seven Point has been a member of the chamber for many years. We have three other, they're not proper businesses yet, who have joined the chamber and are now sort of spending their time getting to know the businesses, getting to know the community, getting to know what's happening. So we've had a few are sponsoring our events. They're about getting their name out and getting some exposure. So.
Has there been any economic projections on it? What the effect would be to a municipality or to us, or and is it something that we want to proactively go after? It's somewhat of a lightning rod for some, but
yeah.
But as an economic development tool, is it a
certainly the president of Cresco Labs
Charles Bachtel. I know him,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think we have anything to offer right now.
Right.
If Madison Street was coming in, we could certainly go out and do that. But
there was a report, and Lisa can speak more to this, but there was a report done by the state of Illinois through the University of Illinois.
Yeah, University of Illinois, Illinois Economic Policy Institute evaluated. They took a look at what the sales were in other states where recreational sales have been legalized. And then our finance director sat down and kind of broke some of that data down to do a projection of sales per dispensary and what a local excise tax, which we have passed, in addition to the state tax, would generate. And at maturity, and relative to a lot of different market conditions, there's the potential to bring in somewhere around $400,000 a year in revenue from a single dispensary.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be a significant new revenue source for the village.
Is there any way to look at what, for instance, if we had a store on North Avenue versus on Madison, just to understand the financial impact of that relative to the proximity to the other stores?
Well, there is a minimum distance requirement in the state statute. So if Forest Park were to have a cultivation center or a dispensary located on Madison Street, we would have to, and it crosses jurisdictional lines as well. So you would have to move about 1,500 feet out, I think it's 1,500 feet, before you could locate another marijuana use. So in terms of the difference in revenue, I don't know that we've gotten that granular about it yet. I think these are really just broad projections based on a total pot of revenue, no pun intended, in another state. So I don't think we have that analysis at this point.
Has anybody done analysis on what size space they look at? Is there an average size?
Well, for dispensaries up to 4,000 feet under the CRTA, the State Act. So you're looking at up to 4,000 square feet in retail. The typical footprint, I don't have that information, but we can certainly talk to them and find out what we typically look for.
So is it the situation because of the distance that whoever gets a dispensary first might preclude us from being able to get a dispensary based on distance?
Potentially, but it really just depends where it's located.
Like right now, for instance, Lake Street, I'd assume all but the furthest west portion of Lake Street would probably be the only place where a dispensary possibly could go in. Is that right, or do we know?
Well, so the 7 points at Harlem and Lake, that draw a big circle around it, that means a dispensary can't go into the village center, town center. But once you get west of William, then really it's open, but then you have to take a look at the 100-foot distance requirement for schools and churches. So, but there are locations on Lake Street where it could go, even with the 100-foot requirement and even with the existing facility in Oak Park.
I think if there's an interest in the community in having such a business, I think it would be helpful for us to at least identify what parcels are eligible and which ones are vacant, so that,
Well, we've done that. We have the map. In fact, I was just seeing if I could bring it up. Lisa's done all that work in terms of through GIS, we've run all the maps to say where you can have it and where you can't. So if someone came in tomorrow and said, here's the spot I'm looking at, we could tell them within seconds whether or not they can operate there or not.
I think if we want to get that $400,000 in revenue, identifying what do we have that's eligible, that's vacant right now. I mean, North Avenue, I assume there's probably some eligible vacant properties there.
Right, but the challenge with that is that I don't know if those spaces are currently big enough for what they're looking for. And keep in mind, it's not even just the gross square footage of the space, but the parking and all the ancillary issues that come along with that. And again, I would submit to you that with having a facility in downtown Oak Park and on Grand Avenue and a finite amount of licenses, and I have not gotten a call from anyone saying, hey, we want to come to River Forest, this is probably in the priority of things and towards the bottom of that list, but if someone did call, we could tell them pretty, uh, obviously very quickly what the possibility is. My hunch is that if someone came in, it would be part of a larger development through a plan development process.
Any other comment? Okay, what's our next issue here?
Next item is SSA number 11 for Chicago and Harlem. So this is a pretty simple, straightforward matter, and thank you, Lisa, for that information, too. I appreciate you doing that. It's great when you have very talented and smart people working for you. makes my job very easy.
It's
fantastic. I love it. So anyhow, in terms of SSA 11, when we approved through plan development the Chicago and Harlem project, staff recommended and the petitioner agreed to putting in what we call as a backup special service area as it relates to the impact fee that we created for emergency medical response. So one of the concerns that came up, questions that was raised from Chicago and Harlem is this project going to create an impact or a burden on our emergency medical response, ambulance response? And so the fire department said, no, we have the capacity to handle additional calls. But we did an analysis based on what the developer came in and said, here's what we typically see in our other projects. And staff went and verified that with those other communities to say, okay, is this legit? And they did say yes. And so we put a threshold in there and said, look, we anticipate going to your facility X amount of times a year. I believe it was around like 120 or 130. In the event we exceed that threshold, the village will charge you an impact fee per call on a sliding scale. So if it's 0 to 10 or 20, it's a certain amount. And then, you know, there's various brackets over that threshold, and that you will pay the village on an annual basis if you go over that amount. In the event that they were to say, we're not going to pay it for whatever reason, we are putting the special service area in place as a way to recoup those funds. So basically, if you don't know, an SSA goes on your tax bill. We draw a circle, square around the parcel, and we can then levy a tax, levy that amount that's owed to us to their property tax bill. So this is just really a best practice that we have started to put in place where applicable in some of our development projects. The other one we put this into was on the Promenade townhome project off of Madison, so that if there are issues with common area issues, stormwater management, or what we have seen, not I've seen in River Forest necessarily, but in our professional careers, where homeowners associations fall apart, and then it's kind of like, well, now what? Now what do we do? And guess who they call? They call the village. Then we have an ability to work with them and then levy a tax back to them to pay for whatever improvements or things need to be done. So the board at their meeting in December passed an ordinance setting a public hearing for that SSA. That public hearing will be at Monday night's village board meeting. And the petitioner agreed to this as a zoning condition. They've also waived the the waiting period in between the public hearing and adoption of the SSA. So this will be a perfunctory matter that'll take place on Monday night.
What are the, what's the nature of these fees in terms of what the real dollar impact? Right now, if you utilize the emergency services, what are you charged as a village resident?
$1,600.
One more time.
$1,600.
Yeah, so we will continue to, so the village has a emergency medical service fee that it bills residents and non-residents for running an ambulance and a transport. So that will continue to happen. The challenge, though, becomes on calls to that service, to that facility, we can only accept the Medicare rate. So the Medicare rate is significantly less than the normal rate. So in theory, you're losing money on the, I mean, honestly, the ambulance fee even that we do charge doesn't recoup the real true cost of that service, right? It's just trying to make a dent into that. And the Medicare rate then obviously becomes significantly less from there. So we'll continue to get that, but there's still an impact to the community if we start exceeding a certain amount of calls. And that fee will help to account for that, whether it's putting that money aside to replace the ambulance faster in the capital equipment replacement fund, more equipment on the rigs, more training resources for the firefighter paramedics, it can go in any of those areas.
As I recall, collection of that type of fee was always limited,
mm-hmm.
shaky, maybe 50% or less.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and check with the fire chief on that. We have increased that fee, and I have to look at the budget off the top of my head. I want to say we budget maybe around $300,000 a year in ambulance fees, but you're right,
there's a big write-off.
There can be, yes. Yeah.
Historically, yeah. There has been.
So, River Forest Civic Center update.
Yep. So, the village is working with our fellow taxing bodies and a consultant that is studying the possibility of what a new community center facility would look like on Madison. And so, that includes all of our taxing body stakeholder governmental agencies, so the school districts, the park district, the library, the township, et cetera. And then we obviously have some non-for-profit partners, the community center, the nonprofit agency that runs out of the Civic Center Authority building on Madison, obviously is a large part of that. Opportunity Knox also leases some space over there. And so basically what we're looking at is a building on Madison Street that it's aging, it's getting obviously older and older. At some point, there's a significant amount of money that's going to have to be put into that facility to make it, to sustain it for the long term. At the same time, there is a need in the community for other recreational opportunities. I think it's no secret that the Park District's been looking for other gym space. It doesn't have a dedicated gym, walking track, better workout facilities, program space, et cetera. So the thought here is, can we put together all these different stakeholders with all of their needs, see where all those needs overlap and where there's synergy, and then as a result, come up with a plan of what a new building would look like, a price tag, how we would pay for it, and how we would govern it. Because right now the building, and this would be probably a separate discussion over a cup of coffee or other assorted beverage one day, but the governing right now for that building is by the township. The township trustees serve in dual roles. They serve as a township trustee, and they're also trustees for the Civic Center Authority. And the Civic Center Authority's only real mission is to oversee the Civic Center Authority building, commonly known as the Community Center on Madison Street. So if this project moves forward, we would then not only have to figure out how we're going to pay for it, but then also look at a new governing structure, because it's going to involve the village, the park district, you know, the school districts, other agencies, maybe some non-for-profits. So a lot of work still to be done. The consultant is working on finalizing what that would all look like. We've done all the preliminary interviews. We've done the initial program. And so they've taken all that, and now they're synthesizing all that information and looking at various options that would be presented back to a working group of staff and elected official representatives from each of those organizations.
And that's strictly on that building on Madison Street, or are they looking at other options?
So primarily there, yes, and that presents its own challenges just from the feasibility of the logistics of the building operating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you get into a preschool situation and some early childhood education that goes on there. You enter a whole new realm with DCFS in terms of how their inspection schedules work and what has to be in place and what will they allow and not allow. We have told the consultant they could look at taking that recommendation and maybe plopping it somewhere else, such as like where Public Works is at, and that feeds into a D a little bit, but we're not spending a significant amount of time on that. The reality of the situation, Nina, is that whatever they propose on Madison would probably, if we had found another space somewhere, we could probably easily just move it here. We just would have to assume land costs and things like that.
Has there been any consideration to possibly acquiring land on Madison? Do you know where the golf driving range is, for instance? It's
yep.
not in River Forest.
Correct.
It's somewhat near. And I know there might be some land remediation issues, but that's kind of a eyesore sitting there. And if that were available for purchase, it would probably be a lot easier to start building a new center while we have the current center, and then the current center might become viable economically for redevelopment if, you know, when Madison Street's done.
Yeah, so the former Bushwood site, I think that you're talking about the driving range, is a former garbage dump. So the ability to build on that is probably somewhat limited. Of course, in engineering parlance, anything's possible, right? But certainly there are some challenges with that. I know one of the challenges the Park District has struggled through through the years is as they've looked at other facilities and other possibilities for recreational opportunities, the ones that have not been within the corporate limits of the community have faced criticism and some pushback. So I don't disagree that it's very close by,
yeah.
But sometimes that becomes a challenge for them in terms of looking at those facilities and just the logistics of building on a dump by the river. I don't.
Is there someone that you can call that could give us a ballpark estimate of what that cost would be and what the land is? Because, I mean, it may very well be that it's just not viable, but let's say, for instance, the land can be acquired and the parcel cleaned up for, I don't know, if it's $300,000, $500,000, whatever, that might help us to have more, you know, the current community center would be, generate more revenue for us if it were redeveloped for business purpose, but I have no idea what that cost is.
Well, it was in foreclosure for a period of time because of some of the operational issues that I've heard just anecdotally from the golf range folks. So I can certainly bring that up to the committee that's kind of steering this project as a possibility to see if that's something they ultimately would want to explore. I would want to check with the stakeholders on that, obviously, to see what their interest level is.
I don't know if there's state funds available to help with turning something around, but the cost is $5 million. It's probably not feasible, but you don't really know.
Right. Well,
there was some discussion about the Menard Folk Brothers facility,
mm-hmm.
With a joint venture with the Park District, but I know Mike from the Park District didn't want to have any part of the Y.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very good decision on the Park District's.
Right.
And that's just because of, I've had a 20-year relationship with the Y, and they've been difficult with certain situations.
Yeah.
It's their mission to do certain things, and it wouldn't necessarily gel with what we would try to accomplish in River Forest.
Yeah, I think the challenge there, and that we'll just naturally slide into D because there's some overlap here with the YMCA project on the Menard site. The village is keeping an eye on that in regards to two things. One, the possibility that there could be space there for our emergency dispatch center. So they are housed upstairs here at Village Hall. They are at capacity. They could not add any more towns or facilities if they wanted to. They are very limited in their space. They need some more room. So we are starting to explore with them and that governing board that I'm a part of what moving could look like, and maybe getting into a lease situation with the YMCA where they're going to have office space as part of that. We would be an attractive tenant because we would want a long-term lease there, and they could then fund that rent revenue into their pro formas and projections to see what that would look like. Plus, having a quasi law enforcement agency in your building 24/7 provides some added benefit and security and things like that. Even though one of the things we would ultimately look at is just knocking on the door of an office building and see what like a Class C office space would look like, because there's a lot of that available in the market as well. So we're looking at that. The other thing that had been touched upon was public works. Would there be additional space in that general area over there, specifically more towards the back where Menards used to have its outdoor storage for lumber and other things? Could you put a public works facility back there, and we could work out some sort of arrangement where we'd either buy that, you know, we would subdivide that space off, lease it from them, etc. You know, that is, I've always, and the board through the years will tell you this, I've always been very skittish about moving public works out of town. Not because it's physically out of town, but response as it relates to flooding and being west of the river. So as these two will tell you, the one thing that gives me massive anxiety is river flooding. So when it rains, exactly, right? So this weekend right now, like, I was looking at the weather reports this morning and I'm already like, you know, got the shakes. So, but anyhow, all kidding aside, they have built up that North Avenue Bridge with the construction, so that is somewhat alleviated in terms of getting over the river, because the last thing I want is Public Works worrying about having to evacuate while also having to protect the community. So trying to find the right space has always been kind of that balance. But I think to what I've been saying, if we could move Public Works somewhere, then that frees up that space in the TIF district as well. So there's...
Melrose want to give up tax revenue? I mean, I don't know how it's technically zoned right now.
Well, it goes YMCA. I believe it will go off the books.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So in to the extent my understanding is from the YMCA folks that they're looking at Menards, they've had conversations with the city of Melrose Park that knowing that that would come off the tax roll. So us being there a part of it wouldn't hopefully cause a lot of consternation with another municipality, because it's not like we'd just be showing up much like a Bushwood situation. If you go to another town and that comes off their tax rolls. And so the other consideration of things like that is they have their own zoning processes and plan developments and things like that. It's no assumption that we would get approved for that. There would have to be obviously a lot of discussions before that takes place.
I asked Eric to put on the agenda the Women's Club building. I don't know if everyone saw the Crane story about the rehab of the Women's Club and ultimately going through foreclosure. They weren't able to sell it.
Yep. And so John can tell you maybe a little bit about that property and the discussions the HPC has had thus far.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how familiar everybody is or isn't with it, so I'll just kind of give a quick synopsis of that. You know, so the Women's Club is a William Drummond building, 526 Ashland, just behind St. Luke's there. And you guys may or may not be familiar with its renovation in the early 2000s. It was traditionally, as a women's club, the majority of the building is an auditorium space. It's a two-story space with a stage. It's kind of got... it's kind of got like almost a ballroom feel to it if you haven't seen it. And then there's a lower like garden level, if you will, that had been used as, you know, part of the entertainment space. And in the early 2000s renovation, that lower garden level was converted to be a living space to make it a single family home, a residential use. It has what amounts to essentially a commercial kitchen that was built into it as part of the residential space and a few bedrooms and things like that. So you can see there's some pretty good pictures of it in Cranes. And if you look for it elsewhere on the website or just on the internet, there's good pictures of it. It's been part of historical walks and things like that in the past. So Chairman Neubecker mentioned, there's been some, it's been on the market for quite some time since 2012. Various decreasing prices over that time, and then was in pre-foreclosure for about, I don't know, 3-4 months before this foreclosure here. It's now in the care of a realtor. The village transferred its water bill, which is usually a good indication of kind of that next step in foreclosure, although we haven't gotten the foreclosure paperwork yet. And then I think the other thing to note is just the preservation side of it. So when it was renovated by the owners, and the Cranes article speaks to the ownership process of it, it was registered with Landmark Illinois, which is a non-for-profit group that does preservation in the state. And there's a preservation easement on the property. So there's deed restriction preservation on that. Again, this goes far above and beyond what the village's restrictions might be, although it is a significant property and subject to the village's processes. The preservation easement with Landmark Illinois goes far above and beyond that. So, there's a couple stipulations in the preservation easement, and I'll tell you, too, that this is a document that we've gotten just from the public Cook County records, the village hasn't done like a full title and deed research on that property, but it's some of the things we've learned so far just from the public records. And so the preservation easement essentially bars change from the property, certainly exterior and very, very tight restrictions on the interior of the property. That in contrast to the village regulations, which don't speak to anything on the interior of properties and only have some restrictions on the exterior properties. So the document does, without taking too much of your time, the document does have some things that it allows. For example, one of the let me take a different approach too. The village over the last couple of years have gotten different calls from different buyers, this property that are interested in it, mostly attracted to its price as it kind of continued to drop. Anything from people that we think intended to flip it to potential buyers themselves. One of the most common requests is what's the situation of the garage? Right now, there is a garage on the property. It's more like a shed. I'm not sure that you could get one car in it. It's a structure on the back half, and so there's kind of two pieces with that. The first is that the preservation easement speaks to allowing them to build a four-car garage on the property. Essentially, when the owners entered the preservation easement, they made themselves some allowances that they knew they wanted to do. One of them is the solar panels, which the Cranes article speaks to. There's solar panels in the rear part of the property. You can't really see them from the street, but if you get close enough on the sidewalk, you can. And then a four-car garage in the back of the property. Now, the tricky part about it is that four-car garage doesn't really fit on the property with the existing shed, so either the shed would have to go or you wouldn't be able to build a four-car garage. Now, from the village's perspective, the shed would just be under the normal demolition process the village has, which is essentially at maximum a six-month delay of that demolition. But it's a little unclear to us what the preservation easement says about that shed, for example. There are some other examples like that. That's the most significant one. Obviously, somebody that buys the property would want to build a garage on it. Please.
Yes, I have a couple questions. First, do you know what the last list price was before it was pulled off the market? Because it's currently not listed for sale. They pulled it off.
Is it vacant?
October 13th, it was delisted. So there's no ask price on it right now, but there was a asking price in October. If you could find out what that is, that would be helpful. And then one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up in EDC is I'm a member of a city club downtown, and I know that a lot of people would like to have a place on the weekend to go, and I think that there could be potential demand if we reached out to the tennis club, university club, the Union League club, other clubs to see, do they want to have a satellite? And that was my thought personally, because it's a satellite club where you could have weddings, other things like that. But I raise it here because I think it's, rather than just waiting for someone to come knocking, it would be useful to know, do we think that would be good to find a use as opposed to having a risk of the building getting torn down? But some people probably that live next door to it probably wouldn't want it to be a club again like it was. So one of the questions for you is it permissible under the current regulation for us to outreach and tell the clubs, look, if you're looking for a satellite, here's a building and we're willing to work with you? Another issue that we got to think about is private clubs typically aren't taxable. So if we did that, would we want to try to negotiate some stipulation to get something, and I don't even know legally if we could, to get some revenue off beverages or tax or whatever. So there's a lot of things there, but first the basic question, is it permissible presently for a club to go back into the space?
Yeah, a couple thoughts on that. First of all, the October 13th price was $632,000. I do think there was a price listed below that, but on the internet here, that's what I'm saying. A couple thoughts on that. First of all, you're right in terms of the neighbors and things like that. Right now, it is zoned as a residential property. So, again, pre-2005, it's existing non-conforming in the residential district as an institutional property. And then when it was converted to a home, it came into conforming with that.
Okay, and so the Board of Trustees would have to
grant and zoning would have to agree to make a variance if a club were to come in. Is that correct?
The likelihood of planned development of some sort of variation, some sort of zoning relief needed is very high.
Okay. So that's something that all we could do is make a recommendation if we thought it was a good idea.
Right.
But, you know, absent us discussing that to figure out, is that something that we'd want be open to entertaining and ask zoning to comment on? Because without that happening, you know, we can't go sending a letter out to clubs if there's not support for it. But I just happen to know that at a price point like that, you know, there might be an interest in running something that's, it probably wouldn't run 7 days a week, but, you know, it might be a Thursday through Sunday operation with a space available for members to rent for various functions. But, you know, there's obviously parking issues that would happen, you know, when events are there, the street would be full.
The only other thing I wanted to mention, too, is in terms of the ordinance, so it does require a couple of things. One is that it be open to the public one day a year. Now, the way that's accomplished now, in my understanding with talking with Landmark Illinois, is Landmark Illinois holds a public inspection there one day a year where they essentially send out their inspectors to walk through the property and make sure that nothing's changed. And that is a open meeting, open to the public. Now, I'm not sure that anybody knows about that, but that's how they're accomplishing that right now. The second thing, too, is there's been buyers that the Historic Preservation Commission has kind of tried to field questions for and liaison for, and been the Historic Preservation Commission, some of their members have been involved in some of those conversations with Landmark Illinois, and Landmark Illinois is very resistant to almost any change to the property. So, for example, some people have questioned about ways that they might be able to convert to additional bathrooms or change things like that, make repairs to plumbing, things like that. And Landmark Illinois has been resistant to all of it. I hear that one of the major concerns is the fact that it has original plaster walls that they're not willing to part with, even for repair work, things like that. So again, to the extent that it's going to be the right fit for a potential buyer, at the time right now, it's probably got to be the right fit completely as is my understanding.
Is it currently vacant?
It's vacant right now. I've been inside of it. I think that the building as is would be perfect for a private club to have another satellite because it's got the kitchen. The only things I see are the big problems is the parking. So obviously if someone were going in, they'd probably have to negotiate with the church nearby for some type of agreement on parking sharing. But, you know, the concern I have is that the building's going to get torn down if nothing happens.
Well, it's not going to get torn down.
Water can get to it.
If it gets set on, if lightning hits it, we can't replace the plaster walls or the, I mean, we're trying to do plumbing repairs and Landmark Illinois is like, nope, sorry.
The question with the teardown really comes down to the subordination of all these agreements and things like that, and we don't have all those answers. Reading the preservation easement, it would read as if all the mortgages are subordinate to the easement, but I, you know, without having that legal analysis done, I couldn't speak to that.
So how do the members of the UDC feel about, is there interest? Do you think it would be a good idea to at least explore and entertain reaching out to private clubs to see if they want a satellite, because that might create a lot more demand for that property, but if people think that that's...
I like the idea, I just don't know, is it feasible, and is it, are there precedents? Does Union League have a satellite?
There's been discussion, there's been discussion about the idea, and some private city clubs in particular have had challenges as people telecommute and don't work downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, for instance, the Union League Club had many River Forest residents, many of which are no longer members because of the they're here on the weekend. You know, they're not downtown as much. So the talk amongst private clubs is that a satellite could be good if it was economically viable. And
right.
You know, if you can get a building for around $600,000 that's already kind of designed for what you're trying to do, and you don't have community resistance. I think the tennis club also River Forest Tennis Club would be excellent outreach because it wouldn't necessarily add a lot of outside cars that aren't already here. And I have no idea if there would be an interest from the tennis club, but these are, you know, I think the approach shouldn't be to zoom in on one, but if we want it to, well, to outreach to all the potential candidates and
the right organization, there's two right organizations, the one here in Chicago and the one in Arizona. But just knowing the problems that, that the old park organization has, with Drummond being a, what the right word is, partner, coordinator with right, that there might be some interest.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they were looking for it, adjunct Billy, but they were looking for it right next door to.
Right.
Sell stuff and organize programs, yeah. But it's, there's a possibility right there.
Yeah.
Plus, they have money.
Yeah, I mean,
certain other organizations you have mentioned,
yeah,
won't necessarily, you know, have the resources to. Not that the Union,
yeah,
Club doesn't have resources, but Civic Club. I don't know.
But I believe, though, if it's a 501c7, I believe that they don't pay tax. I think it's a situation with not paying taxes. So that's an issue of, is it worth it to do that when we're, you know. So it's something that, I think it's something that.
I don't think it can hurt to just explore. Their logical questions would be, well, who's paying, what, you know, what's the cost structure?
I think maybe the thing to do is just to ask that, you know, Bob, you're here from the board, to have people talk about it and get a sense from zoning, from others, you know, is this something that people would want or not want as a potential use? Because the building could probably be occupied much quicker if that were a potential use. But if the community doesn't want it, then, you know, then we know.
So I defer to Eric and the staff in terms of, you know, I think Eric said, you know, what are the chances of rezoning this? And so, I mean, I think that's your biggest hurdle is, you know, understanding that piece before you go out to the world. You don't want to go out to the world and come back and, you know, it's like everything else that you know, over the last 24 months or so that, you know, Eric and the team have done in terms of talking to developers and things and trying to lay out the process. So, you know, I guess if you have to timeline this thing or put a flowchart together, is, you know, what are the critical issues in rezoning? I think it would be the most critical issue in this thing. So,
yeah, but that ultimately comes down to, does a community think it's a good idea to pursue it or
but
not?
Again,
yeah.
You don't want to go to somebody and offer something that you can't deliver on. And
exactly.
The zoning is the problem. You know, again,
yeah. Right. The zoning becomes a challenge of what, you know, community and the residents want. And I think in this particular instance, as John has talked about, this deed restriction from the Landmark Group is significant and a hurdle. So someone that's going to come in and purchase this with that those handcuffs on is going to look at that long and hard. I think, to me, that's one of the major issues that property faces right now. Regardless, even if suspend disbelief for a second and we find the perfect club that wants to come in and do this, and the neighbors are like, yep, no problem, we still have to get through that hurdle.
I was going to say, have you spoken to Landmarks Illinois? I mean, Bonnie McDonald, who's CEO.
Their objective is not to be obstructionist, but...
that's it. I mean, she's very proactive.
They would be very receptive to proactive approach.
I wouldn't say pro-development, but she's very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
She does not want to have historic preservation seen as impeding growth. Or she understands there's money involved.
Okay.
Nobody is
okay.
saying to mothball the building.
But this sounds like, I mean, if you can't even fix a water issue, it does sound like they're being...
But I completely agree. And frankly,
yeah.
I'm surprised because that is not what I would have thought. So, I mean, have we spoken? Has it all been they've proclaimed and we have accepted, or has there been a dialogue with Landmarks about that?
Yes, and not personally. Those conversations have been through the chairman of the HBC, Dave Franek, who has a relationship with Landmarks Illinois, and he's had some of those conversations. Some of them, like I said, kind of as he was tried to liaison between potential buyers that have come to the village in Landmarks, mm-hmm. Illinois, and try to talk through potential issues that potential buyers have seen over the last couple years, and then some conversations just about different possibilities. Speculating a little bit, but I think some of that inflexibility comes from the easement, which I know, I guess now the previous owner, you know, played a role in obviously drafting that easement, mm-hmm. and the protections they felt they wanted on that property that they granted to Landmark Illinois. So in some ways that might be creating some of the inflexibility.
So I just have one question. Amongst the voting members here, is it worth, do you think it's worth continuing to research this and revisit this, or do you think it's just a bad idea? You know, we're not going to do anything today to get anything done, but I can talk to other trustees, I can talk to zoning, but I don't want to do that if all of you think it's not worth.
It's got a lot of hurdles.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the proactive approach, actually. I think I'm always a fan of proactive planning and proactive development. So I don't think it's a bad idea to float some of it. I think just to see.
I don't know that it's going to go anywhere.
I don't either. You know, and going back to zoning, it was an institutional use, so there's precedent. I mean, it's not that that's inconceivable. It was that. I don't know, were there issues prior with the women's club? I don't know how long ago it was functional, or was there problems with it before? It's a non-conforming use, but it was.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. But again, the other thing I would point out too, and as you touch on the proactive thing, I just want to be clear, make sure this is on the record. The Village's Historic Preservation Commission under Mr. Franick's leadership has been talking about this, mm-hmm. and reaching out. So I just don't want the impression to be that we haven't had any discussions or talks about this. Obviously, this is the first touch point for the EDC, but there's been significant discussions with the HPC at this point. So I just, if someone was listening to this, I just want them to be aware that that's, I want them.
Well, I think it's important to talk to all the other committees that have worked on this too. So, and that hasn't been done yet. So,
and to the extent there's someone that you have relationships with at Landmark Illinois that you can put us in contact with, I don't know exactly who Dave has been liaison with. We'd be happy to
know them all.
Yeah.
I know Bonnie very well.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
and
that
Lisa
may be, to me, hearing that there's obviously, I think to me, the next step would be to see if we can maybe get Dave in the room with some of these folks and have a conversation.
Sure.
I think with nothing happening right now, conversation is,
can't hurt.
Yep.
As long as we're not stepping on somebody's toes, that's all.
Yeah, so maybe Tim and Liz, if you can forward me that information, we'll see where that goes.
We'll see. Everyone explores. We'll do an update next month and report what we know.
Just to note, too, there is now a realtor representing the properties. This is kind of the first time that we've had that, now that it's going through the foreclosure process, it's in care of a realtor, so it might change the conversations that we can have there a little bit, too.
Well, and if the realtor knows that this is a potential opportunity, this still has some hurdles, you know, the marketing of that, the outreach and whatnot, that could be something that they could pursue. But we'll do some more check-ins. We'll see where things are. Okay, anything else for the public portion before we go into executive session?
I have nothing.
Is there a motion to go into executive?
Lathrop and Lake, why hasn't the debris been removed? I mean, I know there was supposed to be a recycling of bricks and stuff. Hasn't it been 4 or 5 months since it's been gravel?
Right. So the,
I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, the developer has come in for building permit. So the touch points and the deadlines and timelines in the revised redevelopment agreement have, to date, have been met. So they've got one coming up in January for submitting paperwork to the IEPA. They're on track for that. They've submitted for the building permit. That's under review at our third-party building review consultant. We're waiting for some updates with the developer as it relates to securing financing for loans to finish some of that work up. That's where they're at right now.
Is anything happening with the Whole Foods? Is there an update on that?
Yeah, we can certainly talk offline about that.
Okay.
All right, so I'll need a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of acquisition of real property and sale of real property.
So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right.